Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
With the Kiplinger editors and a longtime member of our Brain Trust, Joan, welcome back.
Thanks, Jim. Hello there.
I mean, really welcome back.
I know, that's right.
We've missed you. Where have you been?
I've been AWOL.
You have been AWOL. MIA, I think.
Right. But
it's
I'm
good
down,
to have you
man.
Back. And
thank
you. I'm a little sad this morning.
Why are you
sad? I'm a little sad today because...
Why?
Well, because of the Eastern Market burned.
Yes, I know.
And now you tell me the Georgetown Library burned. I didn't know that.
The Georgetown branch of the D.C. Public Library, which I'm looking up on the Internet now, is, they say, right at Wisconsin Avenue at R Street.
Mm-hmm.
The sad thing is a lot of the historical artifacts that sort of tell the story of Georgetown's history, since Georgetown predates Washington, D.C., have burned. Mm-hmm. And some may be restored, but some may not be.
This is up Wisconsin towards Bethesda.
Yeah, the address
up.
Mm-hmm. Well, the address is 3260 R Street. I think that's in the heart of Georgetown, and it's right near Wisconsin Avenue.
Right, which is the one that goes north and south there and bisects M Street.
That's right.
Yeah, and so it would be up the hill there above where I usually stay, and so I think you're right, and so but we were just at the Eastern Market the other day. I mean, two weekends ago.
Yeah, and that's a wonderful place that people just love to go to.
We go there every time we go to D.C., we go there because they're the craftspeople who are there making handmade stuff.
Right.
I mean, if you want to go get something, a very unique gift for not very much money, you can go there and find these craftspeople who make jewelry and art and pottery and different things. And it's amazing the cool things you can get there for yourself but also for people that you know that there are people that have everything. What do you get those people? You get them something unique.
That's right.
And so I'm glad to encourage people to go there and to support those people. I'm just feeling really sad, Joan, because of we've gotten to know quite a few of the vendors there over the years.
Right, and it's going to take quite a long time, they say, for it to be able to be reopened.
Oh yeah, and see
the building
that burned down was mostly it was a food court.
Yeah.
Not a food court like
that's
in a mall.
I mean,
you could get something to eat there, but there were butchers and greengrocers and
I'd call them stalls almost.
Well, but they were a little more than that.
I mean,
there were lots of old refrigerated cases and all those kinds of. I mean, any kind of fresh food. And greens that you want, any kind of produce that you want, you could find there. And you know, I'm thinking, Joan, of all the restaurants in the area that go there and buy their fresh produce and the fresh meats. Many of them, you know, that's going to have an impact on the many of the restaurants where they get their stuff.
Oh, no question about it. Yeah.
So this fire affected a lot of people there, and I'm just kind of saddened by, you know, there were a lot of other businesses, Joan, that backed up to that building. That weren't they weren't food associated. They were craftspeople, and they backed up to that building. That's where their little stalls were, as you say. And so now, you know, many of them, that's how they made a living. They literally did their work during the week and then went on the weekend to the Eastern Market and sold their wares and made their living that way.
That's right.
And now they're out of business, and so I'm really sad about that. And so all of you folks out there listening over our D.C. area station, WDMV AM 700, we just want you to know we're thinking about you and we're sad for what's happening, and we're going to keep supporting you. We'll be back next time we're in town. We'll be back and check on you guys and see how things are going. Joan, let's move over and talk about the letter now that we've covered the news in the D.C. area.
Okay.
Let's talk about the... how things are going for the business groups as far as what are they going to be, how are things going to be for them in terms of the lobbying for doing business in Washington, D.C.?
Well, what the lead focused on this week was the Sarbanes-Oxley law,
mm-hmm.
and there's been a lot of discussion about whether Congress might roll back some of the more onerous restrictions in it, and unfortunately we're saying that there's going to be no whole-scale or wholesale changes to the law anytime soon.
Sarbanes-Oxley is the big ugly elephant in the living room right now for the marketplace, especially for publicly traded companies. But it's actually filtering down farther down into smaller companies as well. It's affecting small companies as well.
Right, and large companies that are private, that's true.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, of course, folks, Sarbanes-Oxley was the bill that was passed as a knee-jerk reaction to all of the corporate malfeasance, the WorldCom, Enron, et al., all those things that happened back in, what was it, 01 and 02, in that era?
01, 02, yeah, I think 03. So. That's right.
They all came to a head in those days, at least. They were all exposed in those days. And literally, Sarbanes-Oxley was created in 90 days to as a reaction to these things, when every single one of the things, every single corporate malfeasance act, there was a law against it already. And the people are in jail because of it.
Right.
They're in jail, but not because of what Sarbanes-Oxley did, but because of laws that were already on the books. Joan, the laws we already had worked fine. And Sarbanes-Oxley, I don't think, is going to keep somebody. If they want to mess with the system, they're going to find a way to do it. And so what has happened, though, Joan, as you know, is it's put this an incredible extra amount of oversight requirements on businesses, and it's costing a lot of money, isn't it?
And businesses have complained about this, but it's interesting because we say in here that they haven't made their case to Congress, and the part of the reason they claim is that countries in Europe and Asia are adopting a lot of the same requirements.
Mm-hmm. Well, the biggest problem. Not only is it expensive for larger corporations, but where it's really sad and where it's unfortunate for small businesses, Joan, is Sarbanes-Oxley is causing many small businesses that have grown to the size where they would like to become public. It's gotten to the point where it's not economically feasible for a lot of companies to go public as early as they could have,
right,
as early as they would like to have gone public. And that's not good for, you got a lot of small businesses starting out there right now who will say, I'd like to go public in 5 years. Now they might be saying, I can't go public for 10 years. And that's not good for the economy. 20 after, we'll be right back with Joan Pride. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Do it all night.
Aflac for Small Business, how can I help you?
Yeah, you cover small business?
Yes, we do.
Great, because I'm an ant.
Okay.
I got a tunneling business, you dig?
How many employees?
Well, it's a family-run business, just me and my...
For over about 10 years now, and you can check it out and use the archives, the articles, subscribe to my free newsletter, lots of good stuff there. And don't forget now, we have the new capability where you can actually podcast. You can download any of the archives, all the way back to the original ones, are now available for you to take. You can take them with you if you want. And so use that to your advantage. And you not only do we give you the opportunity to time shift with the on-demand capability, but also place shift. You can take it with you and put them in, burn it onto a CD and put them in your car and do whatever you want to do with them. Just use them to your advantage. That's what we try to do for you. And also, don't forget our other website, which is the brand spanking new one, the knowledge base, askjim.biz. Small Business Answers Now. Check it out when you get a chance. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, we're talking about basically public companies getting squeezed, really in two ways. You guys report this week, and part of it is through the Sarbanes-Oxley encroachment on publicly traded companies. Well, really not just publicly traded companies, any company, but especially publicly traded companies. And what has happened is...
Well, the Sarbanes-Oxley law applies to publicly traded companies, but it has become sort of the standard for a lot of private companies to follow, particularly anybody that wants to take their company public.
Exactly. But what has happened, though, Joan, is it's the way it's encroached on private companies and all the way down to small businesses, is it's raised the cost of audits. See, a lot of small businesses, and a lot of people don't realize this, a lot of small businesses, as they grow, even with their years away from becoming public, as they grow, they need more sophisticated financing from banks.
Right.
And that sophisticated financing mean is you can also read to mean lots of money, meaning $1 million, $2 million, $3, $4, $5 million in working capital, like an asset-based loan or something like that. Well, those sophisticated types of transactions require the company to provide the bank with an audited financial statement.
Oh, right, yeah.
And so they don't; those are very expensive, and that's one of the things that prevents small businesses from getting this kind of financing is they don't want to spend the money on an audited financial statement. Well, with Sarbanes-Oxley, those audits just went up, so it's pushing the ability for businesses to grow out farther, even if they're not planning on going public right now.
Right.
So it's Sarbanes-Oxley, and I warned people, and I know I've said this before, Joan, but I warned my audience, I warned everybody who would listen back in 04, I think it was. Was it 03? I forgot what, 03, I've forgotten the exact year. I warned people as it was going on, as they were in the process of passing this, I said, folks, gird your loins. Anything the government does in 90 days is dangerous. And they did it. They went from alpha to omega, from 0 to 60 in 90 days.
And there was talk when it first passed of rollbacks, but the Republican-controlled Congress did not. And now you've got a Democratic-controlled Congress, so and they seem even less likely.
Forget about it.
So they had their opportunity, but weren't able to do it.
Something's going to have to give, Joan, because it's making Wall Street less competitive for new offerings.
Yeah.
Some of the new stuff I've heard, some of the new statistics are kind of scary about some of these companies going offshore to form their capitalization. Joan, let's move over and talk about the economic forecasts.
Okay.
The big one that I want to talk about is your forecast for inflation.
Yes, which we say just over 2% for the year. Now, what do you think of that?
Well, I think, based on the economists that I talk to, Joan, and what I hear from the Fed, your number may be, like a little bit Pollyannish. Meaning, and I hope you're right, because if we have, according to this week, Ray Keating, with the chief economist with the Small Business and Entrepreneurship Council, was on the show, and he said first quarter inflation was somewhere around 4.3%. So if we're at 2% for the rest of the year, we're going to have to go. Inflation is going to have to drop significantly.
Right.
So the big thing
to
right now.
To offset that much, you'd have to have almost no inflation in the later part of the year.
So I'm afraid you guys may have missed that number.
Well, we'll see.
From your mouth to God's ears. I hope that's the case.
Right.
But that's one of the big things that folks are worried about right now is inflation.
Right.
Isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, there's been some talk in the press of stagflation coming back, which used to be considered an anomaly in economic circles because you had a stagnant economy and inflation at the same time. This was big back in the 70s. And that, boy, you don't want to get into stagflation again because that's kind of a spiral, almost a death spiral that's hard to get out of.
Well, and I asked Ray earlier this week. I tried to bait him twice. He wouldn't take the bait. I brought up the stagflation idea. You would have been proud of me two different times in our visit with him, and he didn't take the bait. He wouldn't bite on it. But the thing is with the economy softening and inflation rising, that's the recipe for stagflation, isn't it?
Right. Exactly.
But then Joan, the thing that makes no sense about all this, and this is the other thing you have to point out, is you got unemployment at a record low. You got 2 million jobs going wanting, and you got a stock market that's going through the roof.
That's right.
So all these stars aren't aligning for a bad situation. I think we're going through just a correction, just an adjustment. That we got a lot of strong, solid fundamentals in the economy right now. Stand by, quick break. 29 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Here's Van Morrison to take us out.
You know, I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. Get all the now.
You've reached Pearson Incorporated. For Matt Pearson Sales, press 1. For Matt Pearson Accounting, press 1. For Matt Pearson Human Resources, press 1.
At Aflac, we know things are different in small companies. Introducing Aflac for Small Business. With Aflac SB, your small business can have the same Aflac products and service.
34 after. Thanks very much for hanging around with me. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, let's just a little bit more on the economy. You guys say that crude oil is going to keep going down a little bit till it gets to around $60 a barrel. What blew me away is it just crept up above $60 a barrel, you know, still below 70, and oil prices went to $3 a gallon and more.
Right.
Gas prices, I should say. And I asked Marty Regalia, the chief economist for U.S. Chamber, I asked him last Friday on the show, why is that? I mean, to me, $65 a barrel oil doesn't coincide with $3 a gallon gas.
Right.
He said it was because some refineries were taken offline for maintenance.
Oh.
So how convenient.
Yeah.
But we do have a problem in America, Joan. We haven't built a new refinery in like 25 years.
Well, that's true. That's true. And that is a big problem.
And, Joan, we're using more gasoline than we did 25 years
ago. Right. Well, we've got those big SUVs, you know.
So what's wrong with that picture, right?
Boy, yeah.
But nobody wants to build a refinery. Nobody wants a refinery in their backyard.
Right. That's right.
I bet they'd take one in Michigan right now, with the economy not doing so great up there in some places. They ought to try to put one up there. And
right.
Other places that where people would like to go to work.
That's
probably
right.
A lot of people around this country would like to go to work in a gasoline refinery.
Well, sure. It's a good job, I would think.
But I think that's one of the problems we got with gasoline is the refinery situation, and we're going to have to deal with that for a long time. I don't see any. You guys talk about crude, but you don't. I don't hear you. I don't see that you report about what gasoline is going to do.
That's right. We don't have that here.
Probably smart, Joan, not to try to predict.
Well, I think in a recent letter we did say that we'd be seeing $3 a gallon national average pretty soon, and we're at that now.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is whether we go to $4, and I don't know if that's been answered yet.
In terms of what the future holds, even though we had a weak first quarter GDP, you guys say that consumers are going to keep being strong.
Yes, that's true.
So you're still kind of positive about the economy, even with all that, and even with the housing situation being as it is.
Yeah, that's right. No, we are.
So well, you know, and I think I agree with you. And I said this earlier as we went to the break. There are some fundamentals. I mean, what I said yesterday, Joan, to my audience when I had a few minutes by myself with them. Was that I think people ought to check their position. You know, we've got some fundamentals of our economy that are not great. Oil prices are high, inflation is a little high, but we've got other fundamentals that are pretty good. Everything around us is not bad.
Right.
As we said, the stock market's good. In terms of housing, even though housing may be off right now. We still have those underlying assets. It's not like when the stock market crashes, and assets wealth evaporates.
Right.
You know, there's real assets in a housing situation. So if you're going to have a market, if you're going to have a market that has to crash, I'd rather it be the housing industry than the stock market.
Yes, that's right.
Because you still have those assets. Joan, let's move over and talk about travel. This is an area that I know you're very familiar with, Joan, the light jets.
Those light jets.
Yeah,
right?
I know you do. I mean, you're always using the light jets to jet around wherever you go.
Oh, yeah,
you
don't have they're small and relatively cheap, as we say.
Well, tell us what relatively cheap means, Joan. Do you know?
Well, I don't bother looking at the bills.
How about $1.5 million?
Oh, yeah, that's no big deal.
Now, that's the new light ones, the new really light jets, the VLJs.
Right.
They're cheap. No, they call very light jets. They're about six.
Yeah.
They're six-seaters.
Right.
And they're about $1.5 million. What you guys are saying is that people are going to start offering maybe some kind of services using the very light jets. You can buy a seat on a very light jet between East Coast cities.
Well, right. We're not calling them airlines per se, but we're calling them air taxi services.
That's right. there is this. It's called Part 135, I think, is I remember, and it's you have to have a certain kind of a license.
Right.
From the FAA, your pilots have to be commercial pilots, and you know, obviously very qualified, and you can fly air taxi, and it's like having a little mini airline.
Right.
But the problem is that for a long time, in order to get people around in those aircraft, it wasn't economically feasible because the jets were too big to do that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Not with the very light jets. And Joan, I know this is really going to be a boon to you. You'll be able to get rid of your big 707, won't you, and go to the light jets.
That's right.
Stay with us. We're going to be right back. 20 till. We got a lot more to come after these messages.
Aflac for small business.
Yeah, you cover small business?
Yes, we do.
Great, because I'm an amoeba.
An amoeba?
Uh-oh, got a split.
Oh, bye.
No, I got a split in half. You know, us amoebas always growing.
Well, with Aflac for small business, you get a lot of the benefits of a big business at no direct cost to you while you're still growing.
Great, because here I go. Much better.
Well, you can both visit AflacSP.com or call 1-800.
I encourage you to check it out, use it to your advantage. A lot of free stuff there, and of course, if you want to go back into the library, the bowels of the website where they got all the lots of research and stuff, I would encourage you to subscribe to one of their publications, which you can do there on the website, or you can call a toll free number, which Joan's going to give you in a minute. But the publications include the main letter that Joan and I work off of, the Kiplinger letter, the flagship document that they distribute every week, and then they've got three biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter, and a magazine. Right, Joan?
You bet. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And you can get it by subscription. You can buy it at the newsstands. And, of course, Joan, why don't you give us that phone number, too, please?
Absolutely. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And don't forget to tell them that you want that 30-day free trial that I worked so hard to get you.
Yep.
Joan, let's move down and talk about a new, well, it's not all that new, but it's kind of an increased awareness of companies making sure that they recognize that more and more of their employees are going to have to be taking care of their families, of their elderly parents. And maybe a best practice that companies need to start thinking about to offer the ability to let employees take care of their elderly people.
Right, and you may have an elderly relative living with you, and this also covers daycare, by the way. But what we're talking about is what they call backup care. In other words, if you've got someone who normally comes in to take care of your child or the elderly person that lives with you, let's say that person gets sick, that means you have to take a day off from work. But mm-hmm. if the company provides a link to backup care of some sort, it might keep you on the job.
How would that work? You know?
Well, I mean, I can think of it working two ways. Now, in this,
would the company actually provide the person, or
well,
just go ahead?
In our item, we talk about offering subsidized services so that you could use. It would be a benefit that you could use. That it sounds like the company would pay for part of the care, but I could also mm-hmm. see it if it's a company that couldn't afford to do that. As long as they had the ability, they could put you in touch with the backup care provider
right.
and had some kind of arrangement with the backup care provider that they could get there on short notice, and you were willing to pay for it, that still would help you stay on the job.
Well, and let me, I'd like to throw out another sort of a bridge step that you can make even prior to that. You talked about companies that couldn't afford certain amounts of this. Even before that, I'd like to recommend that companies be prepared to let their employees telework.
Oh, gosh, don't get me started on that. That would be great.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, what it might mean, folks, is that you have to buy a laptop for the employee.
Right. Right.
Or that you'd pay for a high-speed internet connection to be in their home or something like that. If you got a key employee and their parent, they have to start looking after a parent, but they don't have to be, you know, it's not like they've got 24/7 care. They just need to be nearby. They need to be handy.
Yeah.
They need to be where the person can't be left alone, you know, although, you know, you could work while you're there. You just need to be there. Teleworking is a great way to help deal with that. And a lot of managers, Joan, are having to deal with this, aren't they? They're having to understand that everybody who works with them, who reports to them, can't be right under their nose anymore.
That's right. That's right.
And the same thing with childcare, right?
Oh, no question. Yeah, same thing.
Jonah, as you know, they were in the old days, so to speak, one of the concerns that people had with hiring young women is they get pregnant and have babies, and it's a disruption of the organization, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
And it's just I'm just being honest, and it's just a phenomenon, a natural thing. But now with the ability to telework, it doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to
right.
be that concerned about it. It doesn't have to disrupt the employment relationship or the family situation.
Right, but you're up, and we've talked about this before. In a lot of cases, you're up against the company culture that can't deal with the idea of the employee not being on site.
Well, those are the dinosaur managers that are going to have to get over that, or they're not going
right.
they're not going to survive. They're going to become extinct, not the employees.
That's right. Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Hey, Joan, you made a trip last week, a couple of weekends ago, to Virginia Tech. Your husband
yes.
is an alumnus of Georgia Tech, and Virginia Tech. And you guys had a piece on the campus violence in your letter today. Anything you'd like to say about your time over there?
Well, the time over there, even though it was very sad, as you can imagine...
Was it just the weekend afterwards, right?
It was the weekend afterwards. That weekend was supposed to be what they call spring game, which I guess a mm-hmm. lot of football schools hold in the spring, just a scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
But what was interesting was, even though they canceled spring game, a lot of people came to campus, and I think it was just to be there and to honor the people who died. And I know for a fact a lot of parents came to campus just to see their children and give them a hug.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, even though it was sad, it was tremendously inspiring to see all the people who came to campus and all the good wishes sent from people around the country, around the world, from other schools. It was really amazing.
Well, and I'm glad to know that you guys did that. I know that there was an incredible gravity that was pulling you guys, pulling Ray and so many others. You just needed to go and be there, didn't you?
No question. Yeah, I'm so
just
glad
needed to be there. When we
right.
come back, we're going to talk a little bit about, is Congress going to weigh in on this? And as they often do, are they going to overreact? Are they going to jerk their knee again, as they have done in so many things before? We're going to talk about that with Joan Pride. It's 10 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with me. We'll be right back.
Aflac for small business.
Yeah, you cover small business?
Yes, we do.
Great, because I'm a flea.
Okay. Well, it is a dog-eat-dog world out there.
Look, I got a family business. Oh, here comes Paw.
Oh, your dad?
No, a Paw!
Well, with Aflac for small business, you get a lot of the benefits of a big business at no direct cost to you.
Oh, like a flea market?
And in fact, I heard Congressman Rangel speak shortly after this, and it was very interesting to me because he was asked a question. I thought it would give him the opportunity to say, yes, we're going to go after the guns, and the question was, will this get Congress moving on gun control? And he flat out said no.
Right.
And this is someone who I think is in favor of gun control, but he mm-hmm. was just describing the political landscape, and it's just the will still isn't there.
Well, Joan, let me go on record and say this. I am against, you know, gun control to the point where I'm not allowed to keep and bear arms. I believe that that's my fundamental right as an American, and I want to continue to have that. But I have no desire to own an assault weapon.
Right.
And if I'm going to defend, if I'm a law-abiding citizen, I'm not going to hurt anybody, but I do want to be able to defend myself. And if I'm going to defend myself, I don't have to do that with an assault weapon.
Right. It sounds to me, though, that Congress doesn't even have the stomach to deal with assault weapons at this
yeah.
point.
Yeah. And of course, this wasn't an assault weapon. It was just a semi-automatic, high capacity bullet. You know, a weapon with high capacity for bullets. Well, I guess maybe 18, 19 in a magazine or a clip. And so, you know, I don't know where you draw the line on that, Joan. It's
now that when it's semi-automatic. I mean, I understand that
he has to pull the trigger every time.
You pull the trigger and one bullet comes out.
Yeah.
Semi-automatic, you pull the trigger and what happens?
Same thing. No, semi-automatic is what you just described. You pull the trigger, and only
one bullet comes out.
It means it loads itself. You don't have to load like a bolt action.
I see. Okay.
See, a bolt action is where you have to do something besides pull the trigger every time.
An assault rifle. If you pull the trigger, you keep shooting.
Some of them are, but no. Yeah. Some assault weapons are not. You still have to pull the trigger every time. But it doesn't matter. The thing is the guy wasn't spraying bullets. But he was able to get off a lot of bullets without reloading.
Yeah.
And so I mean that was a lot of bullets. But anyway, it's a sad situation. I don't know what the reconciliation is going to be. But you know, we live in a dangerous world, John. We live in a beautiful planet, but it's a dangerous world.
That's true.
Talk to us about taxes. What's the news in taxes?
Well, we're getting some tax breaks now. As you know, the president vetoed the big spending bill because of the deadline for pulling troops out of Iraq.
That just happened.
The reason I mention is because within that big, huge bill, there are tax provisions to help small businesses, including, I think the big one is, the first-year expensing limit would go up to $125,000 from $112,000. There's also other provisions in there, too. But the point is they're going back to the drawing board on the bigger bill, and I think they're going to work out a deal. And so this bill will come back and be passed in a few weeks, so the tax breaks will get through eventually.
Joan, let me tell you the rest of the story.
Okay.
On the tax issue.
Mm-hmm.
The included in that bill was also minimum wage increase.
That's right.
Which is going to hurt a lot of small businesses, and big businesses, too. And so they were trying. Congress, you know, in their veiled attempt to make up for that, put in these tax advantages, of which, by the way, Joan, originally was a lot more than what you just described.
Well, only on
but
one
they
side. One
they
side
pared
had a lot
it way
more.
The heck back.
Wait a minute. The other side had a lot less.
Yeah.
So they kind of met in the middle.
Well, all I can tell you is the tax advantages that are even proposed now. That went into the law, that went over to the president, are not enough to make up for the minimum wage increase. So there's no, you know, their attempt to ameliorate the minimum wage increase with tax advantages is not very effective, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. But the thing about it is also with the tax breaks that happened, also the minimum wage was vetoed as well, wasn't it?
That's true. It was all vetoed as a package.
The whole package. And so it'll be – my people tell me, my folks who know about these things say that the minimum wage and I guess the tax breaks will come back as a separate issue in the future. What do you think?
Well, they might come back as a separate issue, but I think they'll be harder to pass that way.
Well, so you think they're going to come back? It's going to all be rebundled and.
That's the leader's intention to do it that way. So we'll see.
When do you think that'll happen?
Well, if it's going to be all bundled together, they want to try to get it done by June 1st because I think once you get past June 1st, you start really having an impact on troops because the resources that the troops need have to be there pretty soon.
Exactly.
In this bill.
Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today. Welcome back.
Thank you, Jim. Can I come back next week?
I think so. You've been a pretty good girl today, so we're going to let you come
thank
back.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
¿Ya están listos? Un día vimos un cartel que anunciaba...
En un pueblo de Nuevo México, en la guardería de Columbus, los niños de jornaleros han terminado de comer su almuerzo. Ahora se están poniendo cómodos para oír un cuento y hacer la siesta. Pero hace poco, su día habría sido muy diferente.
Antes que comenzó este programa, los niños iban con los padres a trabajar o se quedaban solos en la casa.
Brenda Villegas es la directora de la guardería quien vino a trabajar con las mujeres.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim. Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.